Well, Whiteboard and his grouping, which at one time came up to 10 or 12, I knew one of them afterwards, finally collapsed of its own weight. Then there was another big organization led by Fields, who was expelled from the Trotskyist movement around 1933 in the hotel strike. And his whole group of six or seven, if that, would also hibernate and try to operate as parasites off the Trotskyist movement. They were around all the time. Then there was another group led by a man named Marlin, George Marlin, I think. He came from Chicago. He wrote a book about that thing on the Paris Commune. Then there were two or three other groupings running around in New York City. Well, if you went to a public meeting in New York City, public meeting run by the Trotskyists, you would have to run through a gauntlet of these people in the hallway. Say this was the entrance. Well, it'd be internal bulletins piled up this high, okay, and 10 different times. This is why I can't go on to feel like that. Then up here would be the Whiteboard Gang. They had bulletins on why Trotsky was a sellout artist, why Cannon was no good, why Shachtman was worse than him, what was wrong with the Communist International. They had everything you could conceive of. And then along the other side, there would be these other guys with the bulletins. And when you went in the hall, you went in for them 15 bulletins under your arm. it was like a menagerie. Well, this was an effect of the decomposition of the Communist movement. That's sort of what it represented, even if it was expressed in this way. It represented splits that took place in the Communist movement from 1919 on, right up to 1934. Now, another feature of Stalinism. I talked of the development in the Soviet Union. They took over the program of the left opposition. They carry on a forced collectivization in which millions of peasants died during the starvation, as well as during the transportation to Siberia. They developed the concept of social fascism. The only way that the regime could stabilize itself in the Soviet Union was by carrying on a civil war inside the country. And that's what they carried on, against the peasantry on the countryside to collectivize the land because of the terrible threat that the peasants had made against the government, against the city, by withholding their grain. And they carried on a terror in the working class, in the factories, by all kinds of stringent laws and regulations. For instance, every Russian worker had to have a passport. An internal passport, the only country in the world where everybody had to have a passport. No other country in the world, not even the fascist Germany developed that. And this was like the land of the rising sun, of socialism, whatever you want to call it. Well, this then they developed the theory that the socialists were fascists. They're fake socialists, they aren't socialists. They're really fascists that cover themselves up by using the term socialist. So they are social fascists. And they are worse, they are 10 times worse than Hitlerism, because they're working in the working class. They're befuddling the working class and fooling them. Therefore, it is absolutely impossible to have any kind of collaboration with these social fascists, because they're enemies of the working class and humanity and everything else. Well, you know how this worked out in Germany. How could you carry on a struggle against fascism in Germany, rising tide of Hitlerism, if you had the socialists and the communists flying at each other's throats? The combined votes of these two parties totaled something like 7 million votes, or 13 million votes, I think, 13 million, something like that. And because of the disunity and the distrust between the two of them, Hitlerism marched into power. That was carried on in this country. Norman Thomas was a fascist. Anybody and everybody in the labor movement was a fascist to one degree or another. William Green was the head of the American Federation of Labor in those days, and naturally he was a fascist because he wasn't a member of the Communist Party. Franklin Roosevelt was a fascist. He was a fascist, Franklin Roosevelt, sure. Now don't ask me, well, how come they supported him 2 years later? That's their problem to answer. But that's what they preached. Anybody and everybody was a fascist to one degree or another. The Lovestonites were fascists, naturally. But the biggest fascists and the most degenerate fascists of all were the mad dog counter-revolutionary Trotskyites. The trade unions were fascist-led. Only a fool would belong to the trade unions, the AFL. Of course, if you belong to one of them and you have to do it because of your livelihood, it's okay to stay in there. But try to break it away from the American Federation of Labor and set up a red trade union. That's what they did in this country. They ran up and down the country trying to build these red trade unions, not fascist unions like the AFL. Well, you know where they got. They got to nowhere. The Communist League of America, of course, had nothing to do with this kind of nonsense. They steered all their membership into the American Federation of Labor and carried on the struggle inside there. The whole super revolutionary program was only a cover-up for the wiping out of all the opposition in the Soviet Union. Now, during this period of isolation and the great terrific odds that were against the development of a Trotskyist movement, don't think for a minute that the American Trotskyists were stagnating and going to hell. By no means. This tiny little group, probably by 1933, when I joined, there was probably maybe 250 members. I doubt it. We didn't have 250 members. Well, anyway, this tiny little grouping brought out such publications as these that are classics of Marxism, if anybody wishes to understand anything about the period from 1925 up to 1940. On Germany, three pamphlets were brought out by this little grouping. Germany, the key to the international situation. Germany, what next? And another pamphlet, Germany, the only road. The three classic articles or pamphlets by Trotsky covering the rise of Hitlerism and the advice that he was given to the German workers and to the German Communist Party leadership, totaling probably 400 or 500 pages. Then Spain had a Spanish Revolution broke out in 1930-31, and Trotsky wrote his famous pamphlet on communism versus syndicalism. That was published by this tiny little grouping, pamphlet of probably 120 pages or so. Then alongside of that was a book, 200 pages, on the problems of the Chinese Revolution. The only pamphlet that has been written, the only book that has been written explaining the real meaning of what Soviets are, what their role is in the Socialist Revolution, so forth. What a united front is, and so forth. All of these books were published by this tiny little group. Then there was several writings on the Soviet Union, on the economic development of the Soviet Union, as well as a history of the left opposition by Max Schachman, various other pamphlets on the American scene by Americans. All this was accomplished by this tiny little group of individuals who made special contributions to see that these books were published. Now, they weren't published in a regular publishing house, but by the party print shop that we had in those days. Now, I'd like to say just one little word about Spain and unprincipled politics. When the left opposition was expelled throughout the whole world, they were expelled in Spain the same as everywhere else. And the leader of the Spanish left opposition was a man named André Nin, N-I-N. He was a founder of the Spanish Communist Party. He'd been a very close associate of Trotsky at the Communist International in Moscow. Alongside of that was the right opposition that was expelled, led by a man named Juan Morin. Now, the left opposition's main base was among the workers, mainly in Catalonia, Barcelona, and the other cities in that province. The main base of Morin was among the Spanish peasantry. And during the heat of the Spanish Revolution, lo and behold, these two organizations decide to merge. Now, what was the basis of their merger? The left opposition, headed by Nin, denounced Stalinism as a centrist grouping in the Soviet Union that had no program that was creating a brutal society in the Soviet Union that was 100% wrong on its present binge of calling the socialists fascists and so forth and so on, that was trying to create red trade unions and everything else. In other words, there was absolutely nothing in common between Nins and the left opposition and Stalinism. Morin, on the other hand, was a right oppositionist, like Lovestone in this country, and his main theme in life was that Stalin is hunky-dory. It's just that Comrade Stalin doesn't recognize that I could run the Communist Party in Spain better than whoever he put in as the leadership. Now, he had two opposites. One that says Stalin's a scoundrel and one that says Stalin's a pretty good guy and a clever guy on top of that, too. How could they unite? Well, Trotsky intervened naturally. And he tried to point out to Nin the impossibility of uniting water and oil. But his words fell on barren soil. And when they united and formed the POUM, the Party of Marxist Unity, Trotsky wrote his letter, his last letter to Nin, and told Nin that he was signing his death warrant, his political death warrant. And we might say that this unification, more than anything else, contributed to the terrible defeat of the Spanish working class in 1936-39. Because Morin and the right wing was the one that set the pace in the POUM, the PUM. This is a terrible lesson in unprincipled politics, unprincipled combinationism. Two groupings of opposite viewpoints uniting to form an organization that was going to turn out and defeat its own purpose and defeat the Spanish Revolution. Well, comrades, that's as far as we'll go. I've yakked for an hour and a half. And I try to cover that period up to the taking of power by Hitlerism, so that next week we should be able to go right through the entrance into the Socialist Party and what we get and our expulsion from the Socialist Party and the founding of the Socialist Workers' Party. Now, any comrades that haven't got the writings of canon on the early history of the American Trotskyist movement should get it, because these talks are based on the writings of Comrade Trotsky, of Comrade Cannon. And the history of American Trotskyism is down here on sale. We ordered a whole bunch of extra copies for the comrades that are going to take the classes. They sell for $2. And the comrades should obtain one of them just as quickly as possible. And then also the other history, struggle for a proletarian party, because that is the companion book on organization on how to build a revolutionary party in this country, not only in this country, but in any other country of the world. Are there any questions, comrades? Yeah, Gary?